very often the child is not looking for pornography, the pornography finds the child. So it can come in pop-ups, in advertising, random people direct messaging children through their gaming consoles. If they're on social media sites, it can be there. It can pop up in search engines. It's on YouTube, it's on Instagram, it's on TikTok, it's in all of those places and spaces our children spend time.
I'm Sarah Kearns and welcome to the podcast. This is a safe space to discuss the topics affecting everyday families. Let's take an inside look into our own realities and the realities of others. We'll learn together as knowledge creates empathy. Empathy shapes the way that we act and those actions can change our family and those around us. This is the Conscious Project. Content warning. This episode discusses sexual themes and pornography. This episode is not suitable for little ears. Today I'm joined by Kaylin Kerr, a former police officer with 24 years experience in law enforcement investigating sexual crimes. Kaylin is highly experienced, educated, and is recognised as one of Western Australia's most experienced providers of child protection workshops. Through her company, eSafe Kids, Kaylin provides national and international workshops and webinars to children. She also educates parents, teachers, and other professionals on how to talk with children, young people, and vulnerable adults about protective behaviours and body safety. This conversation is a big one. It was pretty overwhelming to have, to be honest. It's based around the terrifying statistic that children on average are being exposed to pornography between 8 and 10 years old. It's an important one for parents of all age children, but specifically those of primary age children. It's full of simple and practical tips to help minimize the risks of the internet. Hi, Kaylin. It is so lovely to have you back on the podcast.
Hey, Sarah, thanks for the invitation to come and speak again.
I know that we already have so many episodes planned, but you are just such a wealth of knowledge and I love the way that you go about doing what you do. So we're so excited to hear more of your knowledge and pick your brain on some really overwhelming topic today. I know as a mum of boys and even you're just a mum of young children, it's sort of something that wasn't really on my radar until I started talking to you and listening to you. And then I was like, oh my God, like, where do we even start?
I know it can feel like so overwhelming for parents, and I really do understand that. For me as well, if I didn't work in this space, putting the word pornography and primary school age children in the one sentence, it doesn't feel right. And I think a lot of parents and carers, trusted adults in children's lives, we just didn't have these conversations when we were younger in our homes, in our schools. And so, as you say, it's not that I think parents don't want to have conversations. They just perhaps you don't know what you don't know. So they're not aware of what's actually happening for a lot of children. And then if they are aware, they might want to have conversation and say something, they just don't know how to do it. So supporting parents to have these sensitive, tricky and definitely challenging conversations is so important to me.
Yeah, I mean, I know in our last podcast when you said the average age for, you know, exposure to porn was so young. And I, you know, am an ex-cop and have worked in the child abuse space and things like that. And I was still blown away. Like, so do you want to chat about that a little bit and let our listeners know about the average age and things?
Yeah, sure. And Sarah, yeah, absolutely. It takes a lot of people by surprise. I think the thing we need to understand is that with the internet and technology, it's transferred the way that we're learning, we're creating, we're connecting, the way that we're being entertained and our children are being entertained. And it's given our children access to the world, which is amazing, but it's also given the world access to to our children. So I don't want parents to lose sight of the benefits of our kids being online. We just need to understand that there are some risks, and then how do we minimise and reduce those risks? It's the conversation. So I guess firstly, it'd be important to start with children and their use of technology. So we know in Australia by age 4, 94% of Australian children have access to the internet, and about 88% of those children that are younger than 4. So lots and lots of kids using the internet. So perhaps then it's unsurprising that the average age of first exposure to pornography has been decreasing over recent years. So the average age of first exposure, if we go back just a couple of years, would be reported as somewhere between about 11 and 13 years of age. Now, 11 to 13, depending on the individual child, is probably developmentally at a time when the child's quite interested or becoming interested in what they've got, what other people have got, and how that all goes together. But what we're now seeing is average age of first exposure around Australia and globally is being reported as somewhere between about 8 and 10 years of age, which is, it's primary school age children.
It's terrifying. Like Knox is 8. This is why you're here. I was going to say, I cannot even imagine telling him that it exists. Like, which is exactly why you're here. I'm sure everyone else is thinking the same thing.
Yeah, and look, Sarah, this is the important thing to remember. We're not going to necessarily be telling children that pornography exists. With primary school age children, actually, there's a range of different ways that we can build related competencies with children. So kind of knowing that at some point, if not in primary school, the very early years of high school, there is likely going to be an exposure to pornography. And we'll talk about the specifics of some of those shortly. I think it's really important for parents to understand that when children in primary school see pornography, very often the child is not looking for pornography. The pornography finds the child. So it can come in pop-ups, in advertising, random people direct messaging children through their gaming consoles. If they're on social media sites, it can be there. It can pop up in search engines. It's on YouTube, it's on Instagram, it's on TikTok, it's in all of those places and spaces our children spend time. Interestingly, a study done in New Zealand just in 2019 found that one in four of their young people first saw pornography before the age of 12, and 71% were not seeking out pornography when they first saw it. So I think that's important to understand, because sometimes if we find in a browser history that pornography, a site's been visited or some other content on a child's device, we may jump to the conclusion that the child's gone looking for it. But in fact, oftentimes children are not looking for it. It's sent to them, it's shown to them. They might hear about it at school, and then they're just naturally curious and they type a word into their browser.
And I think that, you know, you've sort of really hit the nail on the head there with, you know, the reason we're so nervous to speak about it all is because it's shameful and it's that ick factor, and we don't want to go straight to shaming the child. But if you've seen that on your browser history, your immediate reaction would be to, you know, be angry and be upset and be shocked, and that would very quickly go into discipline and shame, and so, which would then shut down those lines of communication, right? Like, you're not going to be asked about it again.
Yeah, absolutely. And we do have to be so mindful of our reaction to pornography or other sort of sexualized media, because how we react can really have a huge impact on whether the child speaks with us or a trusted adult in the future. And when we're talking about, you know, sexual parts of the body or those private parts of the body that later on we might be talking about sex or sexual things, we don't want to have shame around that sort of topic because it entirely closes lines of communication. And I often say to parents, do you know what? The reality is, in that moment, you might have a reaction that is different to what you may have planned for. And that's okay. Be kind to yourself. So sometimes, you know, I'd suggest if you do see something or your child brings something to you and shows you, and your immediate reaction is one of anger or frustration or disappointment, okay, go with that. And then just take a moment to sort of regain calm in yourself first, and then just make sure you go back to the child and say, you know what, I reacted, had a big emotional reaction then. I'm not angry at you. I'm not frustrated at you or disappointed at you. I'm just really disappointed that you've seen these photos and videos at this time. So go back and just make sure the child understands that it was your reaction to the content, not to the child.
So obviously my kids have been, you know, raised by two ex-cops. So you'd think that they are quite good with their, you know, names of their anatomy and their understandings of consent and their trusted adults and things like that. But we've never even touched this. So where does someone like me even start?
Okay, so I guess my first bit of advice would be, if you have the luxury of time, and what that's going to be for families will be different, but if you have the luxury of time, you've got children in primary school, what we want to do actually is not start the conversation at pornography. That would be my number one bit of advice. There is so much other work that we can do and education and conversation we can have with children that we're building related competencies so that later on we can talk more specifically about pornography. We might use that word, we might not, but we've already done the groundwork. So I guess first and foremost, I would suggest that we do a lot of conversation and education around social and emotional intelligence and empathy and diversity, equality, gender stereotypes, social norms, and challenging the ones that impact health, well-being, and safety. And then it'd be really fantastic if children understood about reproduction. So books like I've got on my website, The Amazing True Story of How Babies Are Made, that can be really helpful. Mm-hmm. And then we can move into growth and development conversations. So books like A Girl's Guide to Puberty or A Guy's Guide to Puberty, that can be really helpful because then the children have got age and developmentally appropriate, accurate, comprehensive, inclusive education. And then specifically around pornography, here in Western Australia, we do have mandatory protective behaviours and child abuse prevention education. And our children are already being taught about public and private clothing, public and private places and spaces, public and private behaviours, public and private information, the public and private body parts. And so after we've done public and private body parts, we could then talk about public photos and videos and private photos and videos. So you might not like the use of the words private photos and private videos. You might want to say photos or videos that show people that are naked, that aren't wearing clothes, private parts of bodies showing, private parts of bodies touching. So that's some specific language that parents could use if they wanted to. Because by the time we get to the public and private body parts and public and private photos and videos, the kids have got a really good understanding of what that refers to. And it is shame, it's shame-free in that sort of conversation. And there's a great book in Australia. It's called Millie's Message. So it's a book for primary school age children, probably I'd say those that are in year four, year three and below. Mm-hmm. And Millie's this little girl. She's at school and another student shows her something on a screen. It's grown-ups doing things that she's never seen, things that make her tummy feel icky and green. And that's sort of the extent of it. Mm-hmm. So then as a parent, you can use that book to launch into other conversations and education. But in that book, Millie sees these photos and videos on the screen and she can't make sense of it. And so she's trying to process it. So she's replaying it and she's having nightmares and she's not talking with a trusted adult because she's, you know, scared of getting in trouble, having device confiscated, or because it's kind of awkward or uncomfortable. And then eventually in the book, she goes and speaks with her trusted adult and it goes on from there. So that's a way that parents of primary school age children could talk about pornography without using that word.
That's amazing because we actually had quite a few people write in when I said that I was going to have you back on the podcast and saying that their children had been accidentally exposed. A couple of parents actually said that on the school bus, older children had airdropped files to their child's devices and, you know, the other ways that their kids have been accidentally exposed. So that would be a really great way to be able to deal with that issue or that conversation, because your child may not even tell you. You may find out from, you know, the school or however else. But that's, yeah, such a practical way for parents to launch from there, because I can imagine they'd be quite shocked and a bit unsure.
Absolutely. We had, it was going on around Australia, but it was certainly happening here in Perth probably 18 months, 2 years ago, where when people were on trains or other forms of public transport, public spaces, if their airdrop was turned on, lots of pornography being popping up on people's devices. So I guess around devices, particularly those ones that leave our home and go out into public spaces, that really is probably when it'd be a great idea to, depending on the age of the child, set some security around that, turning AirDrop off, so only people that you know can share content with you. And then another thing that we could do is a conversation starter that I created for parents of primary school age children is always being really positive as best we can around their use of the internet and technology, even though it probably makes us want to pull our hair out sometimes. It's uber amazing and it can be completely the opposite sometimes. But the reason I always start here is trying to have as much positive conversation with children around their use of technology and all of the amazing benefits is because overwhelmingly in Australia and around the world, children are generally only hearing from their trusted adults when they're breaking rules or pushing boundaries or using devices in places we've asked them not to or doing things we've asked them not to. And so it tends to be really negative and that entirely closes lines of communication. So I always start with, you know, the internet's really awesome. It allows us to do and see amazing things. But if you ever see or hear or you're sent or shown words, photos or videos that you've got questions about, please come and speak with a trusted adult about it. So you can leave that's really nice and open. And then you can layer on top of that, if you ever see or hear, you're sent or shown words, photos or videos that make you feel scared, upset, confused, nervous, anxious, embarrassed, gross, uncomfortable or unsafe, please talk with a trusted adult. And then you could layer again, if you see or hear or you're sent or shown private photos or private videos, please speak with a trusted adult about it. And this is the really important bit that we need to add, because we know that kids are seeing things. They want to talk with trusted adults, but they're not. Just say, look, you know what, the internet is awesome, but I understand that from time to time you may see or hear or be sent or shown things that you need to speak with me about or that you are confused by. And I'm going to try my best to not react by telling you off or confiscating your device, because I understand that this happens from time to time. And I really want to be there with you to help you make sense of it or support you. And that is actually vitally important, because when I speak to primary school age children, and just I think about the ones I've spoken to in the last couple of weeks, our kids are seeing all sorts of things online. And it's not just pornography, it's hypersexualized content, it's animal cruelty, it's very violent content. And they want to talk with trusted adults, but they won't, because of fear of device removal, fear of getting in trouble, and because sometimes it's a little bit awkward and uncomfortable to talk with a trusted adult about.
Gosh, so much to think about, isn't it? So if that child then, you know, let's say primary school age, and that child does then sort of turn around and say to you, oh yeah, I saw this today, how do you help them make sense of it? You know, if there were airdropped a video or something, inappropriate photos or something, how do you then make let's say primary school age, because I know high school then goes into the whole issues of then they start to send them out and they get repurposed or shared without their consent and things like that. So that's sort of a separate conversation. But, you know, with that primary school younger age, how do you make sense when they may not even have a really good grasp on sex or private areas?
Yeah, and look, it's challenging. So this is why this is fantastic we're having this conversation, because if we can be proactive and prepared, as you can possibly be, and who would have thought that we'd be talking about porn and primary school age kids? But this is why this is fantastic that we're having this conversation, so that parents can actually start to think about, all right, so how might I respond to that? What are my family values? What education and conversation do I want to provide my child? But as a starting place, I guess the first thing to acknowledge and be okay with is that if your child does see something or is sent something or shown something like pornography, it's okay for you to feel angry or upset or sad or disappointed. That's like a normal response and reaction, and that's okay. What I would suggest is if you possibly can, try and compose yourself and your reaction and remain calm before you speak to the child. And the reason for that is because otherwise the child thinks that you're angry at them or you're upset at them or disappointed in them. And it's not the case. It's just you're disappointed in the circumstances. So if you're talking with your child because someone has airdropped something to them on the bus, try and remain calm because the way that you react can really determine how they may approach you in the future about this and other sorts of issues. And then let your child tell you in their own words what they saw, because sometimes we make assumptions about what our children have seen if we haven't had the opportunity to see it ourselves. So give the child some time to speak with you about what they saw. I'd use things like question starters, like so tell me about what you saw, or describe for me what you saw, and then, you know, how did that make you feel? You can ask those sorts of questions, acknowledging that, and so you can even be honest with your child and say, like, I can see that this is kind of embarrassing and uncomfortable for you to talk about. Hey, me too. But you know what? We're going to talk about this, and I'm going to help you and support you to make sense of this. So it's okay to say that you're nervous or uncomfortable. And then oftentimes it can be helpful to get a good understanding of what the child has seen, because that will frame how you may respond or report. And the reason I say that is that there is a very large volume of child sexual abuse material on the internet. And sometimes when children are seeing pornography, if we just hear the words, our mind might go to adults doing sexual things. But in fact, the content our children may have seen is an adult sexually abusing a child or children. So that's why it can be really helpful to get that little bit of more information about what it was they saw, or like when they first saw it. Was anyone else with them? Have they shown anyone? Have you watched it again since? How did it make you feel? And do you have any questions about what you saw? So they're the sorts of questions that we could ask. And then just, support our children, reiterate to them that telling you was the right thing to do, that they're not in trouble, and that if they come across this sort of thing in the future, it's not their fault, and just to please come and speak with you about it. And reassure your child that curiosity and questions about their body is normal. We don't want children to think that sex or sexual things is bad, dirty, wrong, or rude, because quite simply it isn't, and that can contribute to shame. It's important that our children understand, though, that pornography is not a real display of sex, love, or affection. And oftentimes, depending on the age of the child, that's where you may have a conversation around pornography being like a movie. So it's more of a performance. And that's generally not how people choose to treat each other in the real world. Because oftentimes, particularly younger primary school age children, I find that their response is one of fear, because if they have some understanding of sex or sexual things, their concern is that's how their parents or trusted adults might be doing things. And oftentimes, because of the nature of mainstream pornography, what our children are seeing is very often violence, aggression, degradation, humiliating sort of sexual acts. And so they think that's what their trusted adults are doing. So it might be helpful for us to talk a little bit about what mainstream pornography actually is, what sort of content our kids are seeing, because a lot of trusted adults aren't aware that whilst pornography is not new, the nature of mainstream pornography today is very different to anything that we may have been exposed to or had access to in our adolescence or childhood.
Yeah, God, it's got a long way from like the zoo magazines, doesn't it, that kids would bring to school. It's just a whole new level.
So mainstream pornography today is there is high levels of violence and aggression that's shown in the pornography. And I know that this is not nice to talk about, and I want to just preface it with, I'll just give an example of what some of the most common acts that children and young people are seeing in mainstream pornography. And it's not nice to think about, but our kids are seeing content that shows physical aggression. So things like choking, gagging, slapping, hair pulling, and spitting on someone. Many young people that I speak to in secondary school or young adults say that they're deeply concerned that primary school age children are seeing this content because they know what the nature of mainstream content is. It's just often that trusted adults don't. And a lot of adults think that you have to log into a special part of the internet to access pornography or have an account and or pay for it. And that's just simply not true. There is a huge volume of free pornography at the click of a button.
Yeah, God, that's terrifying, isn't it? So yeah. I am obviously a mum of boys age between 8 and 3. And boys or girls, same thing. I just am so used to saying mum of boys, but mum of 3 kids with those ages. So my kids have access to their iPads, which we are now stepping into the world of Roblox. And like I said, I've got a pretty decent idea of what's out there from my experience, which a lot of mums won't and dads won't. But I know obviously we need to go in and disable chat, make sure that nobody can, which Roblox, I was quite impressed on how easy it was for me to go in and make sure that change their ages to filter some of the games out and stop anyone chatting with them or adding them as a friend. They often obviously have YouTube and a little bit on computers. So what, let's say with primary school kids, what should parents go? They've hung up from this podcast and they're like, right, get all the devices and what are they going to do?
Okay, so I guess the first thing I'd always say is that the factors that we can really concentrate our efforts on so that we go from scared to kind of prepared is making sure that we're supervising children in ways that are age and developmentally appropriate. So devices in bedrooms, particularly at nighttime, is going to make supervising really hard. Mm. So supervision is very important. Education around online risks is also very important. Some children will get education at school, but what that looks like is different from school to school. We want to engage in ongoing conversation. So we're going to talk soon and talk often. And then the third, the fourth thing I would always suggest is us participating in children's online worlds in some way, shape or form. So the fact that you've, your child's using Roblox, so you've gone in and had a look at, well, what can I do to make this safe? That's fantastic. And there's lots of resources out there to help parents with all the different platforms that children are using. I would always suggest that any device that children are using or accessing in a home, it has some form of parental controls on. So whether that be the free ones that come on devices or ones that can be provided like Screen Time for iOS devices or Family Link for our Windows devices, use those. All browsers can be put into safe mode. So that's something we can also do. YouTube is a user-generated platform. So there is a huge amount of content that is going to be age inappropriate on there. Mm-hmm. So for YouTube, always put YouTube into a safe mode. Now you can do that on a browser and lock the safe mode on so the children can't then turn it off. But with if they're accessing YouTube via the app or a smart TV, you can't lock those safe features on. So we need to be aware of that. And then I guess some families will find that paying for a third-party parental control actually makes things a lot easier, because if we're going to make YouTube safe on a device, we have to do that on every device the child uses. We have to do that on every browser that the child uses to access YouTube or something else. So, and then we've got our gaming consoles, our smart TVs, and all of these portable devices. So third-party paid parental controls can be really helpful because you are paying a amount of money for a service. But they can help to limit, restrict and filter what children can do and see online. They can also make sure that the Wi-Fi on certain devices turns off, maybe for younger children at 7 p.m., but older children at 8 p.m. or 9 p.m.
Wow, so, that's amazing. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yes. And and they're actually, you know what, they're really cheap and affordable now. I've got a full list on my website. So I always say to parents, you know, do your due diligence, work out what's going to work for your family. The sad reality is, Sarah, that in Australia at the moment, like most countries around the world, the internet was never made for children. Mm. It's not necessarily safe for children. There are a large number of people around the world that create content that is hurtful and harmful and illegal, and they're putting it in a place that our children are spending a lot of time. So at the moment, the onus of responsibility for making the internet safe on the devices your child uses is yours as the trusted adult. There's a group of us in Australia that actually are working very hard at state, national and international levels and saying, look, this is not good enough. Australia is a signatory to the United Nations Conventions on the Rights of a Child, which clearly shows that Australia and the government has a duty to protect our children from harm. And that's not currently occurring, but these are very complex matters that are not going to be resolved or solved overnight. So there is things happening at a government level that will hopefully make this a little bit easier for trusted adults in homes. But at the moment, it really is, it's the parental responsibility.
Yeah, thank God for people like you. You've mentioned your website a couple of times. I'll make sure I link that in the show notes as well as over all of my socials. You're easy to find at eSafe Kids on Instagram as well, which I've linked quite a few times. But your website is just full of so much resources, books. I didn't know that you had all the cybersecurity stuff on there, so I'll definitely be checking that out. I know for us, I remember a couple of years ago, not really porn related, but do you remember when they were doing, like, you know how kids just love to watch YouTube Kids with, like, the kids playing with toys and things?
Yes.
And there was a specific one where the children were just playing with a toy, these little toys, the Peppa Pig toys. And as an adult, you know, you look over at the screen that your child's watching and you're like, oh, yeah, cool, harmless, some little kid playing with toys, that's fine, annoying as anything, but totally fine. And halfway through the clip, those little toys were turned around to show a laptop that was in the background then, which was showing self-harm videos and a whole range of videos. And I know for me, that was enough for me to go, wow, I could be in the same room as my kid. And if I was not watching the screen itself, I wouldn't have known that that had just happened. So we removed YouTube and they just have it on our TV now because it's a little bit harder for me to miss if something's going on. And, you know, the boys love documentaries and things like that. But I think that if you just don't know what you don't know. And I had no idea that that was such a risk, or, you know, I thought YouTube Kids must mean it's safe, right?
Yeah, well, I guess I'd say YouTube Kids is going to be safer than the main YouTube channel.
Yeah.
But I spent about 2 or 3 years trying to break YouTube Kids, and I couldn't in the early days. So that meant that most of the content on YouTube Kids was you know, would have been fine for children of primary school age. But then as time's gone on, that has changed. If you've got younger children, I'd always go for something like ABC iView, where you've got a human being that's curated content and put it into an application as opposed to a user-generated platform. The splice content that happened in Peppa Pig a couple of years ago, before that it was in relation to the Frozen movie, and there was lots of sexual stuff spliced into content on there as well. And this is the challenge. Even with parental controls, whether they be the free ones or paid ones, they're not going to capture everything. And this is where they're tools that can support us, but we should never rely on them entirely. And that's why when I talk about cyber safety, I talk about supervision, education, conversation and participation, because we still need to be having the conversation, providing the education, minimizing and reducing the opportunity for risk or harm to occur. So as you said, with YouTube, it can be quite challenging with multiple kids on multiple devices all over the house. To keep ears and eyes on those devices. So I did the same thing when my boys were much younger. If they were watching YouTube, it wasn't on a handheld device. It was on a large screen, because then I could see or hear it at any point. But then as they've got older, the supervision has started to change, but I can do that comfortably because we've had lots of education and conversation and built up a really, like, sort of trusting relationship around technology. And I think we just have to understand that it's not going to be a matter of if children will see pornography or other hurtful and harmful content. It's when, and the when is getting younger and younger. So building those really positive relationships with our kids around their use of technology can be really helpful for keeping the lines of communication open if things do happen that are out of the child's control or beyond your control.
Yeah. Can I just say, like, it's just so refreshing hearing you speak, because there's so much shame put on parents as well in this world, in, you know, trying to do everything. Multiple children, a lot of us have been through lockdowns this year with way too much device time being just to get through the day and all of the things on our list ticked off. And I think that it's such a balanced and such a realistic view that you have that it's going to happen, and they need to have access to these, to devices and to the internet. And there's amazing things on the internet. Like, my boys are obsessed with the Titanic. They have watched every single documentary or little movie or little everything, reenactment of the Titanic that's on YouTube now, I think. And it's amazing. They've learned so much. They can answer any question that they have through videos and things online. But, you know, it's not about shaming parents and saying, well, you shouldn't have them on devices. They're too young to be on it. And, you know, it's really such a balanced approach that you have.
Yeah, I think, Sarah, I always try and put my mum hat on as well, and think, you know, yeah. if I'm sitting in front of someone talking to me about whatever topic it is, I need to know what the risks is and what they are. But more importantly than that, I need to know, well, how do I minimise and reduce those? And if I just feel like, you know, shamed or just feel overwhelmed with the issue or the problem, in fact, actually, that's not going to be helpful. And it's always a balance for me, because I am talking about the risks and the things that are least desirable about the online space and our children being there. But I never want it to be in a fear-mongering or using scare tactics or parental shame, because I think we're all doing the very best that we can with our very unique circumstances and very unique children. We can't give them everything, and there are things around the use of technology we need to be aware of that perhaps we'll speak about in another segment. But I think, you know, most parents are doing the best they can, and across Australia there are some families, you know, where, particularly where you are on the East Coast, who have relied on technology enormously for leisure, learning, creativity, and most importantly, connection with the outside world and friends. And I think that if nothing else, COVID has shown us that the immense benefits of technology and how that can, in a positive way, impact our health and well-being. And now that perhaps we're back to face-to-face learning and a little bit more freedom of movement within the community, I guess the challenge for parents will be is how to just make sure that the screen time gets back in check. The way that I would suggest people do that is to crowd the time for screens out with other activities if you possibly can.
Yeah,
and be kind to yourself, because this is not easy. You know, we're the first generation of parents that are parenting in the digital age. It's not easy. Parenting, it can be challenging at the best of times, and we have this whole other layer of complexity that we now have to manage as well.
Yeah, and like you said, they're not going to be children forever. So as parents, it's our job to help them form a healthy relationship around technology, sex, and build skills that will carry them into adulthood.
Absolutely. It's not going anywhere. It's a part of their lives now. It is always going to be a part of their lives. So I guess our job is we teach them how to use it respectfully, responsibly, moderately, intentionally, in ways that enhance their life. And yeah, that's what our job is, like it is with most other aspects of parenting.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, it's been amazing to have you on, and we're definitely going to get you back. I know a lot of people want to know all about their teenagers, particularly with them creating their own content and sharing it between partners and things like that, and then perhaps what happens when it goes wrong, and also around more about digital wellness and, you know, screen times and what happens when screens become an issue in the family and how to navigate that world as well. So really looking forward to chatting with you about those ones.
Great. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in today. I would love to continue the conversation with you over on Instagram at The Conscious Project Podcast. Hit subscribe so you don't miss our next episode. And I would be so grateful if you would take a moment to leave me a 5-star review. It really does help. Take care.